You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The Eric Erickson Show across the state of Georgia, around the nation, also broadcasting on Facebook Live. I hope you are doing well this morning. The phone number here, if you would like to be a part of the program, 877-973-7425. That is 877-97-ERIC, E-R-I-C-K, 877-973-7425, being the phone number you would want to use to call in, of course. Now, we need to talk about the elections last night. The elections last night were very interesting, and the media is rushing. The media is really rushing to blame Donald Trump for Matt Bevin's loss in Kentucky. Matt Bevin, the incumbent governor in Kentucky, going down to Andy Beshear last night. Listen, you can't blame Donald Trump for what happened in Kentucky. There are warning signs for the GOP around the nation last night, but Matt Bevin is not one of them. Matt Bevin is not one of the problems the GOP has to worry about. I want to play you some audio real quick. This is from Dana Bash at CNN. Well-respected. I like Dana very much. She's been talking to Republicans overnight. Listen to this.
I was going to say, I just want to add to that, just like David is, I'm getting texts and emails from Republicans from Kentucky to here in Washington who were focused on and working on this campaign, saying that this is Bevin, he's a terrible candidate, he's disliked, he's the most unpopular governor in the country, so on and so forth. But I did get a very candid text as well, to back up what David was just saying, somebody who works very hard in fundraising and strategy broadly in the Republican Party, saying that this, if Bevin does lose, it's a massive blow because the president went down there, the vice president, fundraisers, the Republican Governors Association, the Republican National Committee. And this person said, let's face it, a Republican president having to do rescue missions in Louisiana, Kentucky, and Mississippi means something is happening for the Republicans and Donald Trump, and it's not good.
Listen, it's not good for the president in that he went to Kentucky and campaigned for Matt Bevin. But you do have to remember that Matt Bevin was at 30% of the polls and the president got him up to parity with Andy Beshear, who won by several thousand votes in a close election. But there's a lot of antipathy out there for the president from the media, and they're rushing to blame him for everything. This is not one of the races you can blame on Donald Trump. I want to explain to you why you can't blame this one on Donald Trump. Look at what happened in Kentucky overall last night. Take a holistic approach. If this was about an anti-Republican push because of Donald Trump, you would have seen other impacts in Kentucky that weren't felt. So Bevin lost. In fact, no Republican in Kentucky has ever won a second term for governor. You got to go back to, let's see, we had in 2004, you had, it was Ernie Fletcher was the governor in Kentucky. He was there for a term. You got to go back to World War II for the previous Republican governor. The Republicans flipped the attorney general seat last night. You have a statewide elected black Republican in Kentucky as attorney general now. You got to go back to World War II to find the last Republican attorney general in Kentucky. In fact, the Republicans were able to flip one other statewide seat in Kentucky. They now control every statewide seat in Kentucky other than the governor's mansion. Does that sound like voters were reacting negatively to Republicans when they won every seat, flipped two, but they lost the governor's mansion? Republicans in Kentucky now have a supermajority in the Kentucky state legislature. Does that sound like a Democratic issue? I mean, the Republicans in Kentucky will be able to redraw lines for redistricting now. Even if the governor vetoes those lines, the Republicans in Kentucky will be able to draw the lines with a supermajority. Does that sound like Democratic blowback against Donald Trump? No, the issue with Matt Bevin is that Matt Bevin was unpopular in Kentucky. I personally like Matt Bevin. I know Matt Bevin. I supported Matt Bevin when he ran against Mitch McConnell. Therein was another problem for Matt Bevin, though. He's never been able to patch things up with Mitch McConnell after running against him in 2014. I was totally happy to support Matt Bevin then. I was glad to support him. But he didn't win, and those relationships were never repaired. They all came together in a kumbaya moment for the governor's race in, 2015? But Bevin was not anyone's favorite. The reason Matt Bevin got elected was because there was a nasty, nasty fight between the top two guys. Bevin was running in third, and the top two guys tore each other apart, destroyed each other, and voters were so disgusted with them in the Republican primary, they went with Bevin, who stayed out of the fighting, and he got the Republican nomination. But this year, Bevin was challenged in the primary, and he barely got by with 50% of the vote. I think he got by with 52% of the vote in a Republican primary, the incumbent Republican governor. That should tell you right there that Republicans had issues with Bevin, not with Trump. Trump won the state overwhelmingly. Trump is going to win the state in 2020. I mean, it's a no-brainer. No one even has Kentucky on the radar. So all of the emotional energy being spent in Kentucky on the claim that somehow Matt Bevin's loss was a problem for Donald Trump, that Matt Bevin's loss is on Donald Trump, it's not really true. And you can say it is, and you can say, well, we'll look at the suburbs. Yes, there are problems. But again, the GOP won every statewide office. They flipped two. They got a supermajority in the state legislature. If there was an anti-Republican animus motivating voters in Kentucky, you wouldn't have seen that, but you did. So this suggests it really was about Matt Bevin. There are problems for Republicans, though, and we don't need to dismiss those problems, even if we can say Bevin wasn't one of them. If you look at suburban voters, take Richmond, Virginia. Last night, Republicans lost control of the Virginia state legislature. They will play no part in redistricting. That means that the next 10 years will be a wandering in the wilderness for the Virginia GOP, if not longer than that. Virginia very much has become a blue state, and it's not just the Washington suburbs. Richmond, which had been a Republican stronghold, is now very Democratic. They lost the suburbs. They lost suburbs in the Chesapeake Bay, Virginia Beach, Norfolk area as well. Republicans did not do well in those suburban areas, and they didn't do so because there is a Republican backlash by suburban voters who don't like the president. This is a foreshadowing to come, by the way, of what's happening in the suburbs in Georgia. In Georgia, female voters are increasingly identifying as Democrat, not Republican, and there will be issues in the Georgia suburbs that Republicans are going to have to deal with. Republicans are going to have to put in a very good ground game in Georgia. In Mississippi, the race was not close. There was a lot of media speculation that it could be close in Mississippi. It was not close, but Tate Reeves, the governor, the incoming governor there, did have to call in Donald Trump to help him shore up some support. Suburban areas, even in Mississippi, are trending to the left. That's a warning sign. When you look at some of the counties in Pennsylvania that had local elections, Bucks County, you hear a lot about Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and in the Philly area. It went overwhelmingly Democratic. There are some serious warning signs in suburban areas around the country, even down to municipal elections, that suggest the GOP has a bloodbath coming in 2020 in certain areas. You need to digest that. But, yeah, there is an absolute but we also need to explain. What we are also seeing is that what we're also seeing is that states that are Republican are tending to stay Republican, and states that are Democrat are tending to stay Democrat now. The country really is divided. Now, that sounds nonsensical. It sounds like a nothing burger, but let me put it to you this way. What we are seeing, for example, take the turnout metrics for the New York Times Siena poll in North Carolina. North Carolina has been reliably seen as a swing state, and yet North Carolina very much has become a Republican state for Donald Trump. According to the New York Times Siena poll, Donald Trump wins North Carolina against any of the Democrats. When not that long ago, North Carolina was seen as a potential blue state. People talked about it as a trending blue state. Republicans had that special election where they secured the congressional seat that had tended to lean Republicans, but the suburbs in the Charlotte, North Carolina area trended Democrat, except not all of them did. areas that were trending Democrat, and you've got to pay attention to this. If you only pay attention to one thing in the entire show today, please pay attention to this point. Suburban areas that were trending Democrat rushed to become Democrat in the special election in North Carolina for the congressional seat. The Republican wound up winning. Areas that had been trending Republican rushed to become Republican. What I mean by that is that there have been gradual trends in certain suburban areas making them more Democratic or more Republican. And Donald Trump, if anything, has served as a catalyst. A random experiment for you. Totally random experiment for you. If you take hydrogen peroxide, H2O2. Yes, we're into chemistry now. You'll only hear chemistry talked about on the radio right here. Might destroy the ratings. I apologize to the local stations and program managers for engaging in a chemistry discussion. Take H2O2, that is hydrogen peroxide, two atoms of hydrogen, two atoms of oxygen. You've got H2O2, hydrogen peroxide. You can use it to dye your hair. Hydrogen peroxide wants to get rid of the oxygen as rapidly as possible. If you expose it to light, expose it to heat, or there are various substances you can use. My favorite is called potassium permanganate. It is a purple crystalline substance, and you drop just one little bit of potassium permanganate in hydrogen peroxide, and the whole thing just goes explosive. I mean, it bubbles up. It's like the vinegar baking soda reaction. Except what's happening is you're not creating, like when you add vinegar and baking soda together, you're getting new compounds. With hydrogen peroxide and potassium permanganate, you're not getting a chemical reaction there per se where it's creating new chemicals. It's just releasing the oxygen. The oxygen wants to go away anyway. If you leave hydrogen peroxide in the sunlight, the oxygen is going to leach away and you're going to get water out of it. But you add the potassium permanganate and it escalates. It serves as a catalyst for the pre-existing reaction that was going to happen anyway. Well, we're seeing that Donald Trump, just like the potassium permanganate, you drop it in the hydrogen peroxide, and the whole thing just fizzes up, and all the oxygen goes away. If you stick a match to it, it explodes. It's actually pretty awesome. I don't recommend you try it at home. When I was a kid, I used to. I had this side venture as a kid where I would fill up balloons with hydrogen or oxygen, and my friends and I would blow them up, but that neither here nor there. But it's a catalyst. It's a catalyst reaction. It escalates something that was already going to happen, a chemical reaction that was already going to happen. The catalyst speeds it up. Donald Trump is serving as a catalyst. Donald Trump is, you drop him into suburban areas and you immediately see that hydrogen peroxide fizzing up reaction separating out between the oxygen and the water. You see it separating out the Democrats from the Republicans. You drop Donald Trump in the middle of a suburb and suddenly, boom, the suburb either turns bright blue or the suburb turns bright red. And we saw that in North Carolina. And there were more Republican areas than there were Democratic areas, and that helped the Republicans. And we're seeing that translate differently around the country. For example, in the suburbs of Cincinnati, Ohio is a state the Republicans must win. No Republican has ever won the presidency without winning Ohio. And we're seeing Cincinnati and Columbus, Ohio, and Dayton, Ohio suburbs that had been slightly Republican rapidly turning blue because of Donald Trump. We see this in the metro Atlanta area. I'm in Macon, south of Atlanta. I have a talk show, separate talk show, in Atlanta. I deal with Atlanta a lot. I know Atlanta politics. And we're seeing this in Cobb County and Gwinnett County. With Gwinnett County, what's very interesting is it's not happening as rapidly as Cobb County. And part of the reason is demographics. Gwinnett County has a high Asian and Hispanic population, and Asian and Hispanic populations are not trending as Democratic as rapidly as black populations in Cobb County are making Cobb County, which is very interesting when you look at the demography, and this bears out. This bears out in the Siena New York Times upshot polling that they did, that other demographics that typically means Asian voters, they're not as rushing to become Democrat. And even Hispanic voters have a real shot at becoming Republican. This is a very interesting setup for the GOP, and it's playing out differently in different suburbs around the country. What's so nerve-wracking for Republicans, however, is look at Pennsylvania, where the president won Pennsylvania. But some of the areas that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 against Hillary Clinton are rapidly becoming more Democrat, including some of the Trump voters. The saving grace for Donald Trump in the poll trends in these swing districts, in these swing states, is this. a lot of voters are voting Democrat, except for Donald Trump. These are voters with no institutional partisan loyalty to Republicans. They're loyal to Donald Trump. Donald Trump, if anything, is operating in election years like Barack Obama. Barack Obama could never get Democrats to turn out to vote for his people in off-year elections, but they always turned out for him and voted for his party when he was on the ballot. And Donald Trump is doing that right now. There is a difference, though, that is something the Republicans are going to have to deal with, if we're honest about. And that is, while Republican areas, pre-existing Republican strongholds turned very bright red during the Obama years, the purplish areas, they didn't split apart and catalyze. They stayed kind of purplish. We've gotten to a point now with our politics in this country is so divided. What we're seeing is that in places like Bucks County, Pennsylvania, the Cincinnati suburbs, Dayton, Ohio suburbs, the Charlotte, North Carolina area, the Roswell, Sandy Springs, Lawrenceville and Gwinnett County areas in Georgia, the Dallas and Houston areas in Texas and the like, is that those purplish areas are now themselves splintering very definitively between red areas and blue areas. And more often than not, there are larger blue areas than red areas. That's a long-term trend against the Republicans, and they're going to have to figure out a way to combat that.
Want to be on the show? Call Eric now at 877-97-ERIC. That's 877-973-7425.
I'm back. Welcome. If you want to be a part of the program, it is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Hang on. I got to find this audio. I thought I had it, and it disappeared on me. Where is this? Here we go. Y'all need to hear this audio. I am a big proponent of history. I think we all need a better sense of history. I think that if we don't get a good sense of history, we are bound to repeat history. In fact, we see patterns throughout history where people make the same mistakes and those mistakes lead to the same results. And we as a society absolutely have to be cautious on the idea that we don't need to learn history. There's nothing to learn from history. There are oftentimes people who say that there's so much happening now, we need to be mindful of now. But y'all, I want you to listen to this. This is on Good Morning Britain. This is something happening in Great Britain. And millennials are feeling triggered when they have to learn about World War II. Listen to this. Hang on a second. Let me reroute. Here we go.
Who says it's imperative it's taught in schools. And Freddie Bentley from the first series of Channel 4's The Circle says it's not good for children's mental health. So why do you think that, Fred?
Firstly, I want to start off by saying that I find it very, like, obviously it was a hard situation, World War II, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm being disrespectful in that way whatsoever. However, I will stand by the point that I don't think it's as educational in the way that we, you know, there's so many problems going on in the world at the moment, like Brexit, that's not taught in schools, and climate change, which is a situation that I feel like we should be aware of. And, you know, when I left school, I felt like it hit me like a ton of bricks, because I didn't know anything in general life. I felt like I was going out to the world, I've completed my GCSEs, I felt like I knew that what I was doing in life. Then all of a sudden, it hit me because I didn't know how to save for a mortgage. So I feel like instead of, you know, focusing so much on our history and holding on to this past, that we can let it go a little bit. I'm not saying get rid of it totally, but let go of it a little bit and replace it with a subject that is going to be beneficial to us
in the future. It feels more relevant.
Yeah, more relevant.
Good point, Michael. Does it really matter?
World War, the First World War, the conflicts that have taken place, and,
totally
and the fight for freedom that you and I enjoy.
And I totally get that, but I don't think it needs to be in put in such a young way to young children. Like,
he's afraid it will hurt their feelings, and he wants to listen. I do understand the relevance in public education of learning skills, How do you get a mortgage? How do you save for a mortgage? Things like that. Although if you're coming out of high school, you can learn that stuff in college. And this guy apparently is 22 and been through college and still didn't pick those life skills up. So I don't exactly know how that's going to help him. But the idea that there's nothing to learn from history, there's actually a ton to learn from history. In fact, it's one reason, particularly in war colleges, you have to study wars of the past. You can learn about the generals. You can learn about their thinking, their strategy. You can learn from history things that you can't learn from the present. For example, to understand why there is a Brexit, you do need to understand the history of Western Europe. To understand why there is a European Union, you need to understand the history of Western Europe. You need to understand those things to be able to put the present in proper context. This is one of the biggest issues I have with progressives these days, and it's a historic one. Jonah Goldberg has written about this a lot, is that they have no sense of history. They feel no need to learn history because they intend to change the future, so why be wedded to the past? The problem is they often change the future in exactly the ways people in the past did, and had they learned from those people in the past, they wouldn't have made the same mistakes in the future. You've got to have a sense of history, people. Yes, please. Go to theresurgent.com every day. And you can call in here. Phone lines are now open. 877-97-ERIC. 877-973-7425. Kamala Harris has new legislation she's going to file. She's going to campaign on it. She thinks you'll really like it. Are you ready? She wants to set the school hours of the nation from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. That's right. So every child will go to school from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Yeah. She believes it will fix a misalignment, they call it, a misalignment of the school day and the workday that experts say contributes to $55 billion in productivity losses each year. You're working all day, so your child should too. This is from Kara Vogt at, my goodness, what on earth? Momentary distraction, momentary aside here. Never mind. I'm not going to say what I was about to say. The mismatch between the school day and the work. No, I can't say that because I'll get in trouble on the radio. And you people were lecturing me yesterday about something I said on radio. The mismatch between the school day and work day presents a real burden to working Americans with families. And Senator Kamala Harris has a new bill that seeks to correct it. The majority of school days end around 3 p.m., 2 hours before the end of 70% of parents' work days. And most schools don't have a way to make up the difference. Fewer than half of all elementary schools and fewer than a third of low-income schools offer after-school care. Beyond that misalignment, schools shut down on average for 29 days during the school year, the majority of which are reserved for professional development, parent-teacher conferences, and the myriad vacations and minor holidays the federal government doesn't recognize. That's a full 2 weeks worth of days more than what the average American has in holidays, vacation, and paid leave combined. And then, of course, there's summer vacation, a 2 to 3 month get it out. I've started saying that a lot lately to capture the French-like passion of the resistance movement. This is nuts. This is so essentially Kamala Harris wants to restructure. She's calling it, quote, aligning school and work schedules in an economic growth and child developmental strategy. Kids should not be in school all day. If we're going to restructure, let me throw out a wild, crazy idea. If we're going to restructure society, why don't we restructure in such a way that it incentivizes one parent staying home? Why not do that? You know, the real gap between the wealthy and the poor is parental involvement. Now, I know lots of rich people who pass their kids off to third parties to take care of, and they have screwed up kids because they don't play a role in their kids' lives. But every single study that has ever been conducted out there in any sort of scientific, realistic way has shown repeatedly that kids raised in a two-parent I know this is controversial, but it's true. Heterosexual, two-parent heterosexual nuclear household outperform all other kids. There is some more recent studies that suggest that as society gets more used to having homosexual couples, that that gap between two-parent nuclear households that are straight and gay is disappearing. But it's too soon to actually tell that, that that's an anomaly in the studies because there are so few to study homosexual couples with kids. Right now, the data all strongly suggest a two-parent nuclear household that is heterosexual where one parent stays home, and it doesn't matter whether it's the mom or the dad. In fact, there are a number of studies out there that show that kids who have a dad that stays home with them wind up being healthier overall than anyone else because dads are more worrywarts than moms. Believe it or not, yes, dads are worrywarts compared to moms when it comes to raising kids. In fact, there have been a couple of studies out in the last decade that have shown that kids in single families do better when it's the dad raising them than the mom. Because the dad is much more on top of, oh, you got sniffles, we need to go to the doctor. And that's not to disparage moms at all. I'm just telling you what the studies show. But it's beyond dispute that a two-parent heterosexual nuclear household is the most stable environment to raise children. And the children raised in two-parent heterosexual nuclear households are more likely to, in turn, raise children in two-parent heterosexual nuclear households without divorce. The children of divorced parents tend to divorce. The children of parents who don't get divorced tend to stay married. The children of parents who regularly engage in religious activity tend to be children who grow up, get married, and stay married. Religion and going to church actually build stable families. People who take their faith seriously tend to take the raising of their children according to their morals seriously. Surprise! I mean, none of this should be new to anyone out there. Kamala Harris, to take this approach of, okay, both parents are working all day, so let's make the kids work all day. It's a stupid idea to begin with. Who is telling Kamala Harris that these are good ideas? Do you really think the majority of parents in America who have come to terms with the idea of their kids may go home early from school, the latchkey kids, the whole, you know, in the 1980s, when I was growing up in the 80s and the early 90s, the latchkey kid was a new phenomenon, and the media obsessed over latchkey kids. You know what latchkey kids are? Latchkey kids were parents. They're boomer parents. More often than not, they're boomer parents. Their boomer parents were going into the workforce and having kids. The moms wanted to work. It was female equality. They're going to have jobs too. And so they gave the kids keys, and the kids could drop themselves off at home after school. The latchkey kids, they could let themselves in. They had keys to the house. They knew how to use it. It was a big thing, particularly in the late 80s. In the late 80s, man, after school specials, they were all about the latchkey kids. In the early 90s, about the latchkey kid on the way home, and somebody offers him drugs, and what do you do? And I remember one of the after school specials was the latchkey kid goes home with his bro who buys him drugs, and they get high while mom and dad are gone, and they have a terrible situation, and one of them gets sick, and they don't know what to do, and they all freak out, and little Johnny never does that again. The latchkey kids. So in Kamala Harris's, we're going from the latchkey kids to the imprisoned kids. They're let out at 6 p.m. when the parents come and pick them up. No more vacations for you, little Johnny, because mom and dad can't take it, so you can't take it. Listen, and I don't mean to make light of the situation of parents who are in situations where they do have to work. And their kids take a vacation. What do they do? Does the kid have to come sit at the work with them? I know people who've had to do this. I know people who've had to bring their kid to the office. And I'm sympathetic to that. But do we need to disorder and upend all of society and all of our patterns and practices of society and educating our kids to accommodate parents who work until 6 p.m. when the kids get out of school at 3? We've been doing this for 30, 40 years, if not longer. What I'm struck by here, though, and, you know, honestly, so those of you who got the email, I sent out an email of what the show is going to be. If you want it, so you can see the kind of the order of things that I'm going to talk about, you'll realize that I never, ever follow the order of the show. Those are just to help me think. I want to talk about these certain things. Here's how I'm going to arrange them. Here's how I'm going to put them in order. I was not going to talk about this, and then this hit. So this show has flexibility. If you want that email, by the way, text SHOW to 33777, and you can get it. What was I supposed to be talking about right now? According to the outline, I was supposed to be talking about Epstein and Weinstein. We'll get to Epstein and Weinstein here in a minute. I think this is now hitting the wire, and this is relevant, and we need to talk about this. The collapse of the two-parent heterosexual nuclear household in this country is one of the chief things that has undermined the education system and the economy of this country. A two-parent nuclear household where one parent stays home and helps raise the children, does homework with them, provides for the family while the other goes off to work and works. We consider that a bastion of patriarchy, and that is bad. If dads can work and earn money, mom should work and earn money too, except what we do is this is a very selfish mindset that ignores the kids. Someone needs to raise the kids. And what we're finding more and more is that Uncle Sam has essentially indoctrinated so many people into believing Uncle Sam can raise the kid in a government school while you're off at work, except for those first 5 years. Well, we're going to throw them in some sort of daycare or pre-care where they never build a relationship that is stable with their parents. And now what we find is that those of us who actually took the time to work extra hard so one of our spouses could stay home and raise the kids, we're considered bad. We're privileged, and that privilege is bad, and we can't be listened to. You see how all of progressive society stigmatizes that which is wholesome and good and normal. Gertrude Himmelfarb talked about this, that the bourgeois family is considered bad, that which is good is considered deviant, that which is deviant is now considered good, that which goes against the way we should raise people in society is now good, that which suggests we should raise children in certain ways, that's now bad. Having a parent who stays home with the kids is a good thing. This is not to disparage the people who can't, and unfortunately there are a lot of people who hear this, they're like, you're attacking me, I can't stay home with my kids. I'm not attacking you. It is not my intent to attack you, but it is my intent to tell you that if a parent can be incentivized to stay home with the child, that's what we should do. You know, if I were king for a day, like the Cowardly Lion, if I were king for a day and I could restructure tax law, just snap my finger and say, this is going to be it now. Let me tell you what I would do. I would impose on all Americans a 15% flat income tax. Every penny you earn, every dollar you earn, 15 cents of it would go to the federal government. Everything across the board. From your first dollar, 15 cents. There would be no deductions. There would be no exemptions. We would start it at $40,000. So people who earn less than $40,000, you wouldn't have to pay any taxes. But starting from $40,000, 15% of your income would go to the federal government. No deductions, no exemptions, 15%. It'd be very simple. Fill it out on a postcard. Take all the money you earn, capital gains, income, investments, you name it. And 15% of that goes to the federal government. But if you have children under the age of 18, and you're filing jointly, you're married and you're filing jointly, and one spouse stays home, your tax rate would be 10% with a deduction for your children. So it would actually be less than 10%. No deductions, no exemptions, nothing for your average American, 15%. That money would go, 10% is good enough for God, but we're talking government here. You got to give them 15% because they're not as efficient as God. But if you have kids and you've got a stay-at-home mom or dad, doesn't matter, mom or dad, who's not earning income outside the house, then your income is 10% and you get a deduction for each child you have. The more children you have, the less you pay in taxes. We need to incentivize population growth, and we need to incentivize two-parent heterosexual nuclear household stability for a long-term stable society. That's what we should do. Now, that's a hugely controversial idea. It is hugely offensive to a lot of people. A lot of people hear this and you think you're putting down single parents, you're putting down working women, you're putting down working families. I can't help you with your emotions if you're offended by what I'm saying. I'm just telling you that the reality is a mom or a dad who stays home with the kids has a full-time job. And it's kind of absurd to me that the entire rhetoric of this working moms thing ignores the fact that a mother who stays home with her children or a father who stays home with his children is busting their rear end every day. The modern American homemaker, housewife, house husband, is probably the least appreciated worker in the United States. Because people look at that person and presume they do not work. A number of years ago, because of my wife's health, we decided that it was time for me to do what I could and work as much as I needed to earn the money so that my wife would not have to go to work. And I wound up working three jobs so that my wife could stay home with the kids and raise the kids. And I was burning the candle at both ends. And I do not have a memory of my oldest, the first year of her birth. Very few memories of her first year because I was traveling so much for work. But she got that quality time with her mom. And at that time, her mom was still working. When we had her second, Christy stayed home. And our kids are great. And I feel sorry for our friends who weren't in a position to be able to do that. And it wasn't that I was making an extraordinary amount of money at a job. It was that I was working three jobs to make it happen. Because we believed very firmly in this. If Kamala Harris wants to restructure society, that's what she should do. She shouldn't be punishing the kids because the parents have to work all day by telling the kids they've got to stay at school all day and give up their vacations. She should be trying to find a way to make it easier for one parent to stay home with the kids. That's if we want to restructure society in any sort of way, that's exactly what we need to do. And the fact that that's controversial says all sorts of bad things about our current society.
I really do like his opinion on things.
Eric Erickson, the information you need and the truth you demand.
He tells it like it is.
Live every weekday.
Have you heard of TikTok? You know, TikTok is, well, your kids probably know what TikTok is. It used to be called Musical.ly. It was discovered at some point that there were pedophiles operating or some such. It wasn't good. And the site wound up having to clean up and purge a bunch of people. It wound up getting sold to the Chinese. I want to play a soundbite from Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, who is really making the social media companies, really targeting them, going after Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and the like. Listen to him on TikTok, though. This is really relevant stuff.
You had a hearing today, and you had an empty seat for Apple and an empty seat for TikTok. Why didn't they show up?
Well, because they're afraid to answer questions. TikTok doesn't want to answer to the fact that they take direction from Beijing, that they are exposing our kids' data to the Chinese Communist government. And Apple doesn't want to answer for the fact that they are storing information in China. They're storing encryption keys in China. And that, too, could expose Americans' text messages or emails to the Communist Party. These are major security risks, Martha, and both of these companies need to be held accountable.
Yeah. So Apple, just so you understand, they're holding security keys for Chinese citizens in China to comply with Chinese law. TikTok goes beyond that. And you need to understand this. There's actually a story out today. So, well, TikTok, my kids talk about Vines. Twitter had this site where you could post funny 15 to 30 second videos and it took off. But then Twitter closed down Vine and TikTok kind of replaced it, where these viral videos kids make doing stupid things in 15 to 30 seconds. Oftentimes it's lip syncing to songs, doing funny stunts, things like that. Kids love TikTok. And TikTok is controlled by the Chinese government, by the communist Chinese. And there is lots and lots of data to suggest that they are monitoring your children and building profiles of your children on TikTok. What they're doing, the various algorithms to detect what they look like, what they're doing, is TikTok potentially on some devices spying on kids and using the microphones? TikTok is essentially a tool of the surveillance state of China. And Josh Hawley recognizes this. And look, I've been critical of Hawley on some of his positions on tech companies, including Facebook. I think it's been crazy, some of the things he's done there. But going after TikTok, I think he and Tom Cotton of Arkansas both are on this kick about TikTok and their right to do so. We should be deeply suspicious of the Chinese government controlling technology companies like this, particularly when we know they're using it to build algorithmic profiles on American citizens using these platforms. On top of that, we now know that the Chinese government is using TikTok in a form of censorship. So, for example, if you were to get on TikTok, you would not see very many videos of the riots in Hong Kong. And particularly if you're in China, you won't see any of them. But they downplay things that are critical of China on TikTok. Across the globe, they do that, by the way. They downplay. There's a report out I saw yesterday that they downplay profiles and things. If you've got politicians on TikTok or public personalities who are critical of China, it's harder and harder to find their content on TikTok. That the Chinese manipulate the algorithm. They manipulate the content. They do it to advance the interests of communist China. Your child should not be on TikTok. You should not be on TikTok. In fact, at our house, it's blocked. I've got this device called a Circle. It's Disney branded. I think it's actually made by Netgear. It looks like something Netgear would make. And we can regulate the access of the internet for our children, how much time they have, what websites they can look at, what apps will function, how to block them. And we put out a blanket ban on Snapchat and TikTok. I don't want my kids on either of those in our house. In fact, at my house, you can't even get on Twitter unless you're me. I can get on Twitter because I've gotten around it. You can get on Facebook and Instagram in our house, and that's about it. I am increasingly concerned about my kids and their screen time, and I'm increasingly concerned about the behavior of kids on these social media sites, particularly when they think that it evaporates into the ephemera. You put something up on Snapchat, and kids presume that it goes away, and that's not necessarily the case. Not necessarily the case at all. We got to be more careful about these things, and Holly is right to be raising this issue on China. Now, when we come back, we need to get into impeachment. We also need to get into some Georgia news. Interesting what Delta is doing here in Georgia. And Kanye West, every song on his album is now on the Billboard 100. And you notice how the media just can't bring themselves to talk about it? We would still be talking about Taylor Swift's new album if she had come out with an album. But Kanye West comes out with a Jesus album. And the media just can't bring themselves to talk about it. We should talk about it. But before we do anything, impeachment, the Sondland testimony, and the whistleblower, and why we need to know who the whistleblower is at this point.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.